Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we are honored to have our special guest, Dave Myers. He is a retired commander with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, whose training included investigating shootings and use of force. He also started a border crimes suppression team right here in San Diego. And we're here today to talk about the use of force recently that's been in the news by ICE and Border Patrol agents, including those two deadly shootings in Minneapolis, Alex Preddy, a VA nurse, and Renee Good, a mother of a young child. Both were 37 years old, white, and citizens. So, Dave, let's start by asking, you know, as a veteran of this industry, what is the generally accepted police industry standard for justifiable use of force?
Honesty and transparency. I think we have to start there, that if there is a major use of force by on-duty law enforcement, that the industry standard is transparency, accountability, and at least giving the appearance that the agency who is investigating it is presenting facts. And historically, in all the years, 35 years in law enforcement, I've never seen post-incident where the leaders of an agency immediately draw conclusions, make statements about what happened when the scene has not even been investigated by anybody, where conclusions immediately draw attention to labeling people as domestic terrorists, labeling people as the aggressor, the offender, when even prior to the availability of cameras by everybody, body-worn cameras worn by some agencies, show the truth that we must insist now that the industry standard is, if those statements are going to be what's accepted, then equally, we must have,
right,
if it's body-worn camera.
And I would assume that there has to be a reasonable fear, you know, on the part of the agents. I mean, a reasonable fear that they were facing imminent harm. You can't just shoot somebody just because they were taking pictures at a protest, or they had a, you know, illegally carried gun strapped onto their holster or something like that. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, no, that's very accurate. And each case is very individualized. And I could reflect back on two shooting incidents I was involved in. No reaction time, where a person in the back seat of my car had secreted a gun on their body and they pulled it out and tried to shoot me in the back of the head.
Yeah, and that's clear and imminent danger. So, yeah.
Yeah. And prior to that, where she held a gun to the back of my head and I could hear the trigger being pulled, but the round was batted, didn't go off. That was my immediate fear. That was my immediate need to react. I didn't know any of this prior. Second incident, same thing. I specifically talk about where a security guard, we knew going into that situation that the person had a gun, that the person pointed the gun at a person, another person. And so we took very de-escalation type techniques, standing away, seeking cover, trying to draw the person out when that shooting occurred and the person shot at me several times. So the two incidents that we're describing in Minnesota.
Yeah, let's talk about those, the specifics of them. First, though, I want to just jump in because you touched on it. I was going to ask about this later, but this sort of cover up and the Trump administration officials, you know, trying to sort of blame the victims here without any investigation having occurred, particularly Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem called Preddy a domestic terrorist, or his actions domestic terrorism. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller called him a would-be assassin. You know, they claimed that he was brandishing a gun, and yet the video seems to show exactly the opposite, that he was, the only thing he brandished was a cell phone taking video of him after he had jumped in front of a woman, trying to protect a woman that they were pepper spraying. He was a nurse, of course, that he never took the gun out of his holster. And it appeared that at one point after they wrestled him to the ground and pepper sprayed him, or sprayed him with whatever that was, tear gas or pepper spray, that they then took his gun and then shot him at least 9 times after he was incapacitated on the ground. Is that more or less what you would say you saw on those tapes? I don't want to put words in your mouth. How would you describe, the incident with Preti?
Yeah, it was when the federal government describes chaos, it was clear that the federal agents are the ones that created the chaos. They're the ones, if in fact they were after somebody and were locked out of a business, which was across the street where Preda was standing, it's the agents that crossed the street. It was the agents that confronted Preda, who was holding a camera. There was nothing on any video prior to the incident where anything was discussed about a gun, about him having a gun. There was no discussion about that. He was simply filming from a safe distance. It's the ICE agents that crossed the street, created the chaos, initiated the use of force, and it was complete chaos created by the agents themselves. And to me, it clearly indicated fear by the ICE agents. It created. It, for me, it showed us, the American people, that what untrained federal agents look like.
Yeah, and we should note that he had a legal permit to carry a gun in Minnesota, and even the National Rifle Association has spoken out on this to criticize Assistant U.S. Attorney Bill Esaley, who argued that there was a high likelihood law enforcement would be legally justified in shooting someone who approached them with a gun. Someone else in the administration, I think, said that. Well, it was Noem who said that the mere fact that he had a gun argued that federal agents operated in self-defense. The NRA, National Rifle Association, has called those sentiments dangerous and wrong, and they are calling for an inquiry into the fatal violence that the agents deployed against Preti, stating responsible public voices should be awaiting a full investigation, not making generalizations and demonizing law-abiding citizens.
Well, I did find it interesting that the NRA was extremely slow to come out with any type of statement about the shootings and the two shootings we're talking about in Minnesota. Very slow to come out and talk about it. And then once they finally did come out and talk about it, it was about the retention of weapons, the ability to carry and possess a weapon, license
Correct. That's
to.
their issue basically, and I heard somebody from there interviewed, and they, I guess, didn't want to jump in on the other issues. But you're right, they didn't have a word to say about the killing of Renee Good, or for that matter, other people who've been killed. There have been at least four other fatal shootings by ICE and Border Patrol agents this year alone, and we're only in January, so it's troubling. Let's see, where were we here? Let's talk about the Renee Good incident. Go ahead and describe for us your take on that one. She was
Yeah,
the victim.
from all the videos that I've seen, all the videos that I've been able to watch, all narratives from both sides of the aisle regarding what happened, it was clear that the narrative that they initially put out and continue to put out today is false, misleading information about what actually occurred. Actually, it's lies about what our eyes are actually seeing. The agents were not
Gas, it's
blocked.
gaslighting. Gaslighting.
It's a complete false narrative that continues today to erode the credibility of every law enforcement officer in this nation. It increases mistrust, which, in my opinion, is increasing the lack of cooperation with law enforcement at every level, in every state, in every city and county when it comes to reporting crimes, when it comes to witnessing crimes and talking to police. The situation, in my opinion, was created by the agent who saw what, in my opinion, a victim, saw somebody that they could make an issue over. She was not blocking the roadway. She was parked across the roadway. Yes, several videos show cars driving around her, including the one ICE agent that ended up shooting her in the head and killing her, who walked around her vehicle a couple of times, stood in front of her vehicle one time filming, got back in his vehicle another time, then got out of his vehicle and walked around the front of her vehicle again as other agents approached from the opposite side.
Yeah, and she had,
So,
yeah, she never threatened anyone overtly. The officer didn't need to step in front of her car, clearly could have gotten out of the way. And
And you can clearly hear on the agent who was filming on his video, clearly hear Renee Good saying, "I'm not mad at you,"
Yes.
as he walks out of the picture. And agents who were approaching from the opposite side, conflicting orders, stay, 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 get out of the car. One yelling, get out of here.
Also,
She
even if
turns.
someone feels threatened by, if an officer does feel somehow threatened by a vehicle, am I correct that the protocol generally is you're not supposed to shoot into the vehicle because you could, obviously, if someone is shot and injured or killed, that vehicle could go out of control, hurt somebody else. I mean, what is the protocol if someone did
Yeah,
feel threatened, even
general
though,
policy within all the agencies that I've worked with is you don't shoot at or into moving vehicles, period. Exit if exigent circumstances exist with clearly not in this situation, nowhere to be found, she was trying to follow orders and leave. The agent placed himself in harm's way, created the hazardous situation, and then tried to justify it later.
The other thing that's deeply troubling is that in both of these two killings, there happened to be a doctor or a medical professional on the scene who tried to come forward and say, "Let me offer medical aid, perhaps to save a life," and they were denied reportedly by ICE or Border Patrol. I think it was ICE that killed Renee Good and Border Patrol that killed Mr. Pretty, but they were denied the opportunity to offer prompt medical aid. Whether they might have been able to save either of them or not, who knows? But I mean, that's, you've been a law enforcement officer. If there is a police shooting of a suspect, no matter what they did or are suspected of doing, isn't the protocol to immediately, try to offer aid, do CPR, call for medical help, professional medical help?
Yeah, so in a critical incident like this, where individuals show up at a crime scene that's very fresh, a scene where a very critical incident occurred, a shooting specifically, and somebody claims to be a medical professional and they want to help, even though you've called for medical professionals who take, quite frankly, a long time to get there, and time is of the essence, but you're also concerned about the integrity of that scene itself. Your priority has always been to save lives and render aid. And it was very interesting and very unfortunate that in both those cases, individuals claiming to be doctors or medical professionals were denied access to assisting. I mean, we see it all the time on planes where individuals, doctor, attendants on planes or pilots request, "Is there a doctor in the house? We need somebody." And somebody claims, "Yes, I'm a physician or a doctor or something, and I'm going to come and help you." Yes, that's the right thing to do. But in this case, it's clear that they were, to me, trying to cover up what may be seen by a medical professional.
And at least in the good case, I believe the officer that fatally shot her ran away from the scene, according to the news reports I've seen. I mean, that would be completely unprofessional, right?
It's not uncommon in a shooting situation to have the officer who shot the weapon at somebody to be extricated from the scene, to take them somewhere else, but you don't disturb the scene. He's all by himself. What's wrong? He walks back to his vehicle where it was strategically parked for whatever reason. He gets in it and drives away. That is contamination of a crime scene. That alters the crime scene.
Now we are starting to see pushback against what's happened there. I mentioned the NRA. It's coming from both sides of the aisle in some cases, although the Trump administration has not done a whole lot. There is a Republican candidate for governor who was polling in the top three there, Chris Madel. And he announced he is withdrawing from the race a couple of days ago, as of our press deadline for the show here. He turned around and said specifically, "I cannot support the National Republicans' stated retribution on the citizens of our state, nor can I count myself a member of a party that would do so." He went on to talk about ICE having gone way beyond the stated purpose of this to go after true public safety threats, and instead, and he said, "United States citizens, particularly those of color, are living in fear. U.S. citizens are carrying papers to prove their citizenship. That's wrong. ICE has authorized its agent to raid homes using a civil warrant that only has to be signed by a Border Patrol agent. That's unconstitutional and wrong. And he went on to talk about even police officers there being stopped and racially profiled, adding, driving while Hispanic is not a crime, neither is driving while Asian. At the end of the day, I have to be able to look my daughters in the eye and tell them I'm doing what I believe is right. So, you know, whatever else this guy may have done or stood for at one time, I guess that takes some political backbone. Locally, we've seen of our five congressional representatives, Daryl Issa, the Republican, has been silent on this. He basically praised Trump, you know, but he hasn't gotten into the specifics on this. The other four are four Democrats. All of them now are calling for the impeachment of Secretary Kristi Noem for her, you know, her actions and statements, as well as Congressman Scott Peters has introduced what he calls the SAFE Act. I believe he actually introduced it last fall, but now he's suddenly getting more people signing on. That is aimed at sort of reining in ICE and putting some procedures in place to help try to prevent, you know, this kind of thing. I know you were involved in, you've talked about this border crime suppression team that you started up. Can you talk about that a little bit? I understand you were able to help successfully, you know, dramatically reduce the kind of violent crimes that most people are probably worried about, you know, which is a small percentage of within the immigrant community, of course. But tell us how that worked and what lessons that you learned could be applied here.
Sure. Let me get back to your starting out observations about the Republican that dropped out of the governor's race in Minnesota. Why did he wait until after the second killing of an American citizen?
Oh, good
Where
point.
were
And
her?
he was actually an attorney who actually represented the agent that shot the first one. So I don't know. I can't get into his head, you know, and explain that seeming
Well, just from
contradiction,
my
but
observations and experience, what got into his head were polling numbers.
that could be.
Citizens in Minnesota that he expected to elect him governor spoke loudly, and we need more of that.
Well, maybe that's a good thing though, because it points to the power of the people that
Yes.
your voices out there have more influence than you may think if it's suddenly persuading even a very conservative Republican who has, you know, not been outspoken against any of this to suddenly decide enough is enough and to come out and speak out, even if it's for self-preservation, you know,
Yes.
nonetheless, that's I think an important point. But go ahead.
Yeah, so the 2010, we are a community. San Diego County is a community along an international border. We essentially have 60 miles of land border just in San Diego County, with an international country. And we also have 90 miles of coastline. We were seeing crimes attributed to that proximity. We hadn't identified the immigration status of those committing the crimes. But what we found out later, after we initiated the program through federal grant money, was the majority of those exploiting the proximity to an international border were US citizens. They were not immigrants. They were not immigrants coming here to prey on Americans, period. So, what we did was, and I took the initiative, even though it was a federal grant offered throughout the United States, any police agency, was that I was the only one that wrote in the grant that we would not enforce immigration civil laws, period. But we wanted to coordinate with DHS, DOJ components, FBI, DEA, ICE, Border Patrol. And we did. And it was very successful in reducing crimes in America by going after anybody who would commit those crimes and use the proximity with an international border to commit crimes. Very successful in reducing, even eliminating, crimes in communities associated with a proximity, from human trafficking on boats that land along our coast, to those individuals that smuggle drugs in the United States, from methamphetamine to fentanyl, and use our freeways to transport those drugs. Two different areas in the United States, very successful crime rates that were reduced. And that was a proven strategy that continues to be funded today, actually, where the County of San Diego probably has received in excess of $90 million over the years. That's the solution to crime control, not creating fear based on a person's immigration status.
Because obviously, the vast majority of immigrants are law-abiding, and in fact, the crime rate nationally is higher among citizens than it is against among immigrants. That's a little known
Yeah,
fact.
we saw as a result when Ronald Reagan, a Republican, was president, and he allowed, he notified those immigrants that they were now U.S. citizens.
He had did amnesty,
Yes.
approved amnesty for many of them, which, no one has on the Republican side, at least, has been willing to do since then. How concerned are you that these really violent actions that we're seeing by ICE could happen here? And I want to preface by saying we've been talking about two killings, but there's really been a lot more. There was a young man, I think 21 years old, in Los Angeles who was blinded by ICE. There have been reports of deaths, even at least one homicide in ICE detention facilities, and many people being picked up and detained, indefinitely, who were not criminals at all. In some cases, were not even immigrants at all. How concerned should San Diegans be that San Diego, which Trump has called a sanctuary city or sanctuary county, could be on his radar as a target for these kind of massive sweeps that we've been seeing in places like Minnesota?
Yeah, we've already seen a lot of negative effects of the current policy by the Trump administration in San Diego County with a restaurant in North Park where they
I
came
remember, yeah,
and they took a
flashbangs
lot,
and
yes, flashbangs and treated the people. I've been talking a lot about accountability within the San Diego County jail system and jail deaths and the lack of
Yeah,
transparency.
another whole
Well,
issue, but yeah.
besides the two shooting deaths by immigration officials in Minnesota, is the deaths of immigrants who are currently in ICE custody across the United States, and the lack of transparency, the lack of compassion and understanding about those that are dying in custody who are unlawfully held. 70 to 80% of those in ICE custody for immigration violations have zero criminal records, no criminal records whatsoever. We're still seeing family separation. I spoke out very publicly very years ago about the immigration family separation policy. And who is profiting for that? Let's not forget who is profiting from the current immigration policy. It's the for-profit prison industry.
Yes. Like the one that runs the Otay Mesa detention facility,
Yes, and the one
right
that
here in
runs
San Diego
the
County.
old downtown San Diego jail, where still today is run by and houses immigrants.
It's shocking, really, and sad.
Trump's solution to Minnesota, besides removing Bovino and removing Noem and sending in Holman,
Yeah, Gregory Bovino, who I believe was in charge of Border Patrol when these shootings happened.
right, and sending in Holman, who claims to be the border czar, he's the one who has been a lifelong ICE agent. He's the
Tom
one
Homan.
who was caught on FBI surveillance tape receiving $50,000 in an alleged bribe,
Corruption.
which was to steer contracts to the for-profit prison industry. And that is
Really?
not the solution to Minnesota.
No, that's very alarming. It seems like a blatant conflict of interest. Also want to touch on Bovino, Greg Bovino, who we spoke about. He is apparently stepping down from being in charge in Minnesota, but supposedly he's coming back to where he was stationed before, which was in the detention in or Border Patrol rather, in Imperial County. What do you know? Do you know anything about him personally? How concerned should people in Imperial County be about having this guy be back in charge there?
Well, don't limit it to people in Imperial County being afraid of him coming back. San Diego County needs to be petrified. I've had a long established working relationship with federal officers from the Border Patrol to ICE, and I still hear from them today and describe Bovino as anti-Semitic,
Ooh.
anti-immigrant, personally receiving anti-Semitic hateful messages from Bovino just because they were Jewish,
Awful.
and calling immigrants a cancer on society, and the cancer has to be eliminated. And this goes back to 2013. This is who Bovino is. This is who the Border Patrol has accepted, even after these Border Patrol agents filed EEOC complaints about him. That's who is coming to town. Bovino is not going to get the camera face that he wants and craves in Imperial County. That means he's going to find it in San Diego and come here to push a narrative and enforcement tactics that he thinks are accepted.
Very frightening. So, to be clear, his jurisdiction will include both Imperial and San Diego, or you think he's just going to be trying to do the PR thing and get in front of the cameras here,
So a lot of people talk
or both?
about he's demoted. Just look at his collar. His collar has two stars. That means he is the person in charge. He's not removing those two stars. And the person in charge of the San Diego office does not have stars. So
That's
Bovino outranks.
what authority could San Diego or Imperial County authorities, like sheriff departments, or for that matter, our state attorney general, Rob Bonta, who has said that he wants to hold, like federal law enforcement agents accountable if they commit crimes, could you see a scenario of somebody like Bonta or one of the sheriff departments going after Bovino or anyone under his command if they were to commit, chargeable crimes here?
So I have very serious doubts and absolutely no confidence that Sheriff Kelly Martinez is going to do anything when the iNews source just did a story recently where she continues to cooperate with ICE against California law. I have no confidence that Chief Scott Wall of San Diego Police Department is going to do anything. If you remember at the restaurant in San Diego County, he did nothing to stop the excessive use of force by federal agents. Bonta has promised for years to investigate the unnecessary, unlawful, and horrific jail deaths in San Diego County, but has
Right.
done nothing. I am not confident, even based on Bonta's California Attorney General Rob Bonta's statements, that he's going to do something, that he actually does something. Local law enforcement, I ask you, I beg you, if you see in your presence crimes being committed, it doesn't matter who it is, take enforcement action.
Could they, in theory, if a local law enforcement agency, not necessarily the ones we've mentioned, but let's say something happens in, La Mesa or some other city with a police force, can they take a federal agent into custody right there if another situation like the Preddy killing, which many have called outright murder, some of our congresspeople have spoken out and they've called it cold-blooded murder, can they take somebody like that into custody right there on suspicion of murder or another crime?
Absolutely can. Every California peace officer, state peace officers, local peace officers certified by the state of California have the exact same authority to take enforcement action. The U.S. Supreme Court, year over year over year, has historically given local peace officers the right to take action based on what's called probable cause to effect arrests. And it's the exact same expectations you and me and the public would expect from California peace officers, regardless of where they are. If they view a crime occurring in their presence or occurring in close time to when they arrive, they have an obligation, they have a duty, there is an expectation that they take enforcement action and take that person into custody, preserve that crime scene, and fact find.
Now, it's interesting that in Minnesota, the governor called out the National Guard after this last killing. And, apparently the National Guard was there, I mean, telling ICE you can't touch these protesters. And by some accounts on social media, handing out donuts and hot coffee to the protesters in the cold weather, which certainly would seem to be a de-escalation tactic. I mean, what's it going to take to get this stuff to stop? And I'd also like to ask, for the public out there listening, what can people do? I'm sure, you're not alone. There's many, many people out there who are deeply concerned by what they're seeing happening, and they're asking, what can we do about it?
Courage. What it's going to take is courage on the part of California peace officers to their duty to act, to protect the public. If the National Guard is even brought in, I remember the days after the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, and the National Guard was brought out to protect, to even protect peaceful protesters. If somebody protesting is violent, if somebody protests and it's articulated and you could see it and they're destroying property, yes, law enforcement has an obligation to stop that and arrest those individuals. And there is no difference between federal agents, rogue police officers, rogue federal agents who are violating the law to take action against them.
Yeah, arguably some people might say they're more afraid of a rogue agent than they are of the immigrant dishwasher that lives next door.
What I'm more afraid of is allowing rogue law enforcement personnel to continue because it erodes the public's confidence, which would take decades to fix.
Yeah, absolutely. We certainly want everyone in our community, whether they're documented or not, to feel like they can come forward if they're a witness of a crime or a victim of a crime, to report it, which protects everybody else in the community. Dave, we are nearly out of time today, but I want to give you the last word here. What else would you like our audience to know about this increasing escalation of violence by ICE and Border Patrol that we have not already spoken about? What final words of wisdom would you have to offer?
What we're seeing today, in my opinion, is an erosion of due process. It's a normalization of government deception. If they come to Minnesota, they've come to Minnesota. They've killed what we've seen on camera, two Americans. You could be next.
Very chilling words. And sadly, I believe you are right. Every one of us is at risk until this lawlessness, unfortunately, lawlessness in some cases by law enforcement is reined in, and we have the rule of order and respect for our laws and respect for the Constitution restored and due process for everyone. For those of you who may have tuned in late, we have been speaking with Dave Myers. He is a retired sheriff commander here in San Diego County and also helped start up a border crime suppression team right here in San Diego that was very effective at reducing violence without demonizing every immigrant out there. Dave, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you for having me.